Welcome to the Beyond Finding Equine podcast. I'm Morgan Stevens, an equine postural and performance practitioner. I created this podcast for other horse enthusiasts to learn and hear about all sides of the equine industry. On this podcast, I'll be interviewing other professionals and getting their takes on the horse world. You can expect controversy, advice, inspiration, and surely to get your horses feeling fine. Welcome back. You guys voted on our TikTok and our Instagram which episode you wanted to hear tonight. So we listened, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear this episode. I think that it's going to be everything that you wanted and more. I would recommend getting a notepad and a pen or a pencil and getting ready to take some serious notes, because this episode is full of advice you do not want to forget to help your horse. Unfortunately, in the equine industry, proper equipment fit is not very well taught. And I would say, as well as many other practitioners, that poor equipment fit is a leading cause to injury. Saddle Fit for Life is a great resource for saddle fitting education, and you get to listen to them right now. Where did the inspiration come from for you to be a saddle fitter?
Well, it didn't come just like, boom, there, I want to be a saddle fitter. It started off by when I was still a little kid in Germany, born in Germany, but my dad taught physics and math in many different countries in German school. So we lived in Buenos Aires, Argentina, for 6 years. And as a little boy, I saw a rider passing by my car, my dad's car. We were in the traffic jam, and he was chasing one of those birds. The bird went left, the bird went right. And I didn't know what that was first. And the gaucho, the cowboy, followed this bird, but he didn't touch the reins. But somehow the horse knew how to chase that bird. And he had these bolas. Bolas are rocks attached to three ropes, and he throws them around the bird's legs. So that happens all so fast. And all I saw is how a human and horse connected, and it was magic. From that moment on, I wanted to be a rider. And then I wanted to be a veterinarian. And then I spent too much time in the barn, not enough time in the school. And my dad says, you know, if you really, really want to do something with horses, why don't become a saddle maker? No, I don't want to be a saddle maker. I want to be a rider. I wanted to help horses and be a veterinarian. Well, so, well, then you need to work harder in school.
Yeah.
So why in the meantime, until you get your marks up, do this trade as a saddler? I said, okay, fine. And then I got into this job as a saddle maker, and I absolutely loved it. I got to fix my own tack. I constantly broke, and I understood more the interface, the saddle, how it connects with the horse and with the rider. And as in any apprenticeship, you do as you've been told. And my dad told us kids, you know, if you really want to become somebody, and you want to be a leader, then you have to ask the question, why? Why is it like this? So he also said always, the person who knows the how will always follow the person who knows the why. So I am in the apprenticeship. Why do we need to do it like this? And why, and why, and why? So while I was riding for Germany as a three-day event rider on the German team, I'm not here to brag. I'm just saying, in the meantime, I was keep riding, and I was sponsored with saddles, even though I was going through my apprenticeship. And while my sponsorship changed, every saddle fitter told me something different. And I got really curious as a rider, not as a saddle maker. And I says, why is each company saying something different how a saddle has to fit? Then I ask my vet, and I ask around, and nobody really seemed to have the answer. To fast forward, I became then a master saddler after I did my journeyman's. And then I started my own company. And I was invited at the university in Holland in Utrecht, and there was a horse galloping on the treadmill, and they invented this new camera, what is a very thin camera, size of your hair, and they injected underneath the saddle in the front, and they could see how the saddle interacted with the horse while the horse is walk, trot, cantering on a treadmill. I will never forget this image. And what they saw is how the saddle has to fit right behind the shoulder, and if it doesn't, how it cripples the horse long term. When I saw the presentation at the university in Utrecht, it's in Holland, I cried. I had to leave the auditorium, and I called my dad and says, "Dad, I know my calling." He says, "What? I thought you were a saddle maker and then eventually wanted to be a vet." "No, Dad, I know what I want. I want to know everything about saddle fitting, because my horse was pulled from the team because we had an undetected lameness." And I thought, why is he getting so nasty? Why is he biting? Why is he getting so angry? Why is his whole personality change? So we're getting up through the ranks and we jump bigger fences, and he's super, super talented, but something flipped. No, we had top vets, we had top farriers, we had super trainers, and you really, it's all about kindness and have great body workers, which was unheard of back in the 80s. But anyway, I felt I had a good team around me, but nobody really knew anything about saddle fitting. So it came back to me. Yeah, I remember every saddle company I was sponsored, they said something different, which contradicted each other. But now I had science behind or in front of me, and it says, there is no way humans should lose their best friend. The horse gives everything to us. And for us to cripple the horse unintentionally, it's a no-go. And from that moment on, I knew what I wanted to be. I wanted to create, which we have, Saddle Fit for Life. It's an academy which has an online course for anybody. If you just want to know a little bit, or you go as far as have the part of which is soon going to be a curriculum in the universities and the equine industry, you can really expand here. And I wanted to base it on science, law of nature, and not just opinion. And my path was set, and from that moment on, I know I want to be a saddle fitter. Morgan, I'm so sorry I elaborated so long, but I wanted you to understand how I got there. I didn't say one day, oh, I want to be a saddle fitter.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that that's amazing. What a cool story with your start. And that was really cool.
And you know, it's so hard, because I saw the horse on the treadmill, and I cried because I felt, oh my God, I did this to my horse.
Yeah.
You know, and how as a saddle maker, as a sponsored rider team member, how could everybody who supported us fail? Right? Back then we could say, well, we didn't know. We didn't have MRI and fiber optic cameras, but now we have.
Yeah.
And today, not knowing anymore is not an excuse. It's just we need to be careful what we feed our horses. We need to be careful how we train and ride them and care for them. That's saddle fitting too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know with horses that I see, and I've heard lots of other people say this too, but that equipment can be the number one cause of injury. So what are some injuries that can occur from ill-fitting saddles or ill-fitting equipment?
Well, I'll give you a good sample. My horse tried so hard to clear these big fences. I mean, I was going a three-day event. Either we clear the fence or we somersault, because these fences are solid, right? So he tried so hard, but he had this undetected lameness we couldn't figure out. Later on, right, when the horse is dead, we know, oh my God, you know, that bone has deformed. We know through science, through anatomy, biomechanics, physiology, when a bone is under attack, it grows bone. And on top of the shoulder blade is a huge cartilage. And that cartilage, same like your nose, your ears, okay, it's on top of the shoulder blade. And there is several videos and several people who show this now on small YouTubes, what happens if that saddle doesn't fit. What I saw at University of Utrecht, It actually cripples a horse for life. Once the cartilage is damaged, it doesn't regrow. Once your nose is damaged, it doesn't regrow. Your ear doesn't regrow. So that cartilage what a horse has on the shoulder, that is a permanent damage. Other signs would come from ill-fitting saddle is deformity on the spine. You all of a sudden look at the top of the spine and says, what's that bump? Feels really hard, feels like a bone. Thank God we have now so many amazing therapists, you know, anywhere from chiropractors to physiotherapists to osteopaths, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, now we know, oh my God, if you put a saddle on top of the spine and ignore what has been taught and be done in saddle making for thousands of years, stay off the spine. Okay. If that gets ignored, the spine deforms. So all of a sudden we see under the saddle looks like a rotated vertebrae, or it looks like a torn ligament, and then that little water blister comes up. So you ride, after you take the saddle off, say, what's that bump? You touch it, it's very, very soft. After 20 minutes, it's gone. And that happens every time you ride. And then someday you ask the vet, says, what is this? They're getting concerned because this is getting bigger and bigger. It looks like a blister. Well, does it hurt the horse? No. Does he react when you push on it? No. Well, then worry about it. Maybe it goes away, but you notice how it goes worse. So we know through science that kissing spine is a disease, but it's also caused by saddles or, like you said, equipment or doesn't fit right.
Yeah.
A horse is it's a master in disguising pain because otherwise they get eaten. So they find a way to go. And if the dorsal spinal processes, if they start to overriding dorsal spinous processes, also known as kissing spine, they calcify. So they're glues together. So we have studies shown, and we have people who are specialized as veterinarians on backs, and they say, simple facts, a horse that gets driven has 3% of the horses, the disease caused kissing spine. So tell me why Western horses have 40% kissing spine, and every horse what's ridden in English saddle has 80%. How come the horses what gets ridden hunter, jumper, dressage, eventing, trail riding, have the disease higher? No, it has something to do with how the equipment fits. Mm-hmm. And the other question comes always to mind is, how come that a smaller horse with a heavier saddle, the Western saddle is heavier than the English, and the average Western rider is heavier than the average English, how come they have less kissing spine problems? Because they have a bigger pounds per square inch weight-bearing surface. The equipment is not as severe as an English saddle. Now, many people said to me before, how come you only do English? If you're hard and your calling in life is to protect all horses and riders from ill-fitting saddles, what about the Western? What about the English? What about the racing? Once we got into the racing, once we got into the Western, the body of the horse is the same. Mm. But I was astounded how much worse, and I'm embarrassed to say that, Morgan, but the English saddle fits so much worse than the average Western saddle. Again, because of pounds per square inch. So types of injury occur from ill-fitting saddles, definitely spine deformity, definitely kissing spine, definitely cartilage damage on the shoulder, nerve damage, hunter bump, you see them a lot now in dressage horses too. And the list goes on and on and on. So, but these are the main thing that jump up.
A couple episodes back, you might remember that we talked about ulcers, and we talked about a specific product aiding in ulcers, and that was Nutrabac pH. Nutrabac pH is a 100% all-natural blend of plant oils and plant extracts which aids in neutralizing excess stomach acid, washing out harmful bacteria, and balancing pH during times of stress. This product also encourages feed and water intake during rigorous transportation, competition, and training. It's highly effective at reducing ulcer signs as well as ulcer maintenance. NutriBack is something that I use within my herd, and it saved me from being in a couple of really sticky situations, whether it be ulcers or colic. So if you are interested in trying some or getting your hands on some, please reach out to us either on our social media, Feel and Fine Therapy, or our website, feelandfineequine.com. Are custom saddles then a good option for horses, or because their bodies are kind of always changing, is that something that we should stay away from?
Absolutely. Custom is the last thing I would go. I would rather, we teach our students to say, be very careful when people say custom. There's a company called Custom Saddlery, and there's other companies. There's so many people would call them custom. But it's a saddle that has a non-adjustable tree. Like you said, the horse changes, it doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. Same with Western. You get a custom saddle, the horse change. Oh my God, I need a new saddle. Once I read the book from a veterinarian who's also a chiropractor and acupuncturist, that some horses need their saddle 4 times a year adjusted because of their inherited problems, genetic, the way they're ridden, the injuries they had, whatever. I can't afford 4 custom saddles a year. So does that mean I just ignore the equipment fit? So the more important question you always should ask as a consumer, is the saddle adjustable, if it's an English saddle, in the tree width and tree angle independently, and in the Western, are the bars on your Western saddle adjustable on the 7 key points? Mm-hmm. If they say no, then don't buy a custom saddle because you keep buying new saddles over and over. Unless you get a custom Western saddle, what has the options where you can have the bars adjusted, the 7 key elements. Same with English saddles. Unless you have a custom English saddle, so long they can be adjusted in the 12 elements, 2 of them are the tree, the angle and the width, the panel length, the flocking, and so on and so forth. So I love that question. You know, careful with the word custom. You know, not always everything is custom.
yeah, absolutely. So what, in your opinion, is more important, a saddle that fits the horse or a saddle that fits the rider?
I used to say always the horse, as a rider, as a trainer, as a judge. I always said that. And I was really dumb. I was really got thrown back on my back when I saw the clinical research, how important it is that the saddle fits rider first. I could not believe when I read that. And I came also across a statement which is over 400 years old and still taught at the riding school in Vienna, a Spanish riding school. They say, if the rider doesn't have a pliable seat, and it doesn't matter what type of rider you are, a person who sits on the horse doesn't have a pliable seat, the horse will suffer pain no matter how the saddle fits the horse. So the question comes, what's a pliable seat? Well, let's start off, how do I sit in the saddle? I sit in the saddle the way I'm standing on my feet, with a straight back, with a straight pelvis. The difference, standing or sitting in the saddle, when I'm standing, my weight is on my feet. So when I sit in the saddle, Western or English, I need to rock my pelvis back and forth. That's what they call pliable. In other words, I need to be able to stick my belly button as far as I can while my feet are not in the fenders or stirrupleathers without hitting my crotch or my private parts. And I got to suck my tailbone all the way back so I tilt my lower back without hitting my tailbone or cramping up in my thigh or in my back. So if I can't tilt my pelvis in my saddle, Western or English, doesn't matter, back and forth, I don't have a pliable seat. I was floored to see that a rider who weighs 180 pounds can ride actually as if he weighs 90 pounds. How is that possible? Well, it's
Wow.
how you feather and move with the movement of the horse. I was floored how a rider was weighing 130 pounds, ride like a 260 pound rider. Why? Because their back was rigid. They protected their rubbing in the front or the groin, or the twist was too wide, or the knee wasn't free swinging, right? So, and these are, Morgan, these are facts. These are not opinions. And then I thought, maybe the old masters, they knew something. This is why you are on the launch line for a long time at the Vienna Spanish Riding School. If you want to ride there, you got to learn your seat first, right? And that's why I always thought the saddle has to fit the horse first. Nope, the saddle has to fit the rider first, because the rider, unless you're a little kid and grow a lot, the rider doesn't change as much as the horse, right? So the
Yeah.
saddle has to fit the rider, but it has to be have an adjustable saddle in the width and the angle, or Western in the bars, so it can accommodate the horse's life. If it's age, is it nutrition, is it training, is it accidents, you name it.
Yeah, that's great. So you gave us some really good tips on what we as riders can do to check and make sure that our saddles are fitting us. Do you have any tips for people where like simple things that they can do to check and make sure that their saddle is fitting their horse?
Yeah, there's two types of saddle fitting checks. One I call the static, and the other I call the dynamic. In the static, go to the horse and look where the mane ends, and then make a line on the horse where the mane ends, and a nice vertical line. Okay, make that 10 inches long. If you don't have a chalk, just lick your thumb. Make your thumb wet and go against the hairline all the way to the top, to the mane. Nice perpendicular line. So this is that you're marking the edge of the shoulder blade. I'm going to come back to the part why it's so important that you got to put that line on. Okay? And it doesn't matter if you're a racing, if you're into racing, or if you are a show jumper, inventor, or a Western rider, or dressage. It really doesn't matter. That line is important. Then the second line is at the flank. Once you've seen a horse being reined on it, you will see how the water comes down the side of his body. It comes together because in his flank, right, we call it the flower, right? So the hair grows up and then it goes forward. And then from the shoulder towards the back, it comes together. We call it the rein line. And that line is very, very visible. Thank you. It depends how wet the horse is, or if the horse is dry, you have to look a little closer. So then you go on and make a line all the way up. So you have your front and the back line. In between that line, if it's an English saddle, the D-ring cannot go over the front line. If it's a Western saddle, the first concho cannot go over the front first line. Of an English line, saddle, the panel cannot pass that back line. If it's a Western saddle, the back concho cannot pass that line. Western saddle have bars what flare up in the back, pass that last concho, and they flare up in the front from the first concho to the front. Those bars are never to put any contact to the horse. They need to be above the horse. So I start with the Western. You want to run a pencil between the front of that Western saddle. Okay. Stick the pencil 4 inch from the front in, and it should run all the way free through. Okay. No pad, no girth, no rider. Just loose the saddle on. Okay. You need to have clearance. That will tell you if the front flare has enough room for the shoulder. The back, the same. You stick the pencil in the back, 4 inch, and then you run it down the horse's flank, and you do not want to have any resistance. You want to see if the pencil slides easy through it. Then you stick the pencil where the end of the mane is on top of the withers. And you want to see if you can run the pencil down 4 inches on that line, the first line you made. If you can't, the bar width is not wide enough. If you can, and it's a lot of room, it's way easier to put more pads on it. Many Western riders make the mistake they buy $400 and $600 pads because it's pinching there. Okay? If I have a shoe, a running shoe, a dance shoe, a football shoe, a soccer shoe, whatever shoe, where my toes are so narrow squished that blood blisters on the edge of the baby toe, there's no sock, no insole what makes that shoe wider. If you have a Western saddle with the bars so narrow, there's no pads, okay? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even ride on it. So if I ride, let's say everything checks out, then I put my pads on it, then I put the girth on it, I take the reins in one hand, and then I jam my hand where the first line was at the end of the withers. I jam all my fingers in there. And then I go walk, trot, if you're comfortable cantering with one set of reins. You want to see that your fingers do not get squished on the side. That is the most important part. From the end of the mane, 4 inches down, you got to stick your whole hand, you slide it from the top down where that opening is from the front, where the horn is, the swell, okay? On an English saddle, you look at the first line, the second line, the saddle fits in between these two lines, then you run your pencil at the end of the mane and run it down 4 inches. If there is no pencil clearance, most of the time where all English saddle have the D-ring on the front, that pencil got to easy go through there. The girth is not on, the pad is not on, the rider is not on. This is just a static fit. Now, it's going to be too overwhelming if I'm going to explain all that and go through all the 12 points. But the most important points are the 3 points I'm going to tell you now. Mm-hmm. The first line and the second line on the English saddle, same with the Western. Then at the end of the mane, 4 inches, got to be all the way through. And then you turn your saddle upside down. And the stuffing on an English saddle can be out of foam, out of rubber, out of wool, out of synthetic. There's so many different types. That spinal clearance must be 4 inches and not just in the front, all the way from front to back.
I think by now in the episode, you guys are starting to figure out that proper fitting equipment is pretty important for your horse. Well, this doesn't just limit to saddle fitting. It also includes the bit that you're using in your horse's mouth. That's why you should check out Cavalon Tack. Cavalon was founded on 3 principles, affordability, quality, and convenience. They maintain affordability by prioritizing their customers over profit. They assure quality by carefully handcrafting each bit while sourcing only the best materials. They provide convenience by guaranteeing fast free shipping, 60-day returns, lifetime warranties, and an excellent customer service. You guys, there is not even a code needed for these because they are so stinking cheap. So go try these bits out. You will not be sorry. Go to CavalonTack.com. That's CavalonTack, CavalonTack.com.
So all Western saddles have the bars 4 inches apart. But unfortunately, some English manufacturers do not follow that spinal clearance rule. Okay, they don't believe on that. Okay, so whatever reason, I have no explanation. So this is your static rule. On a dynamic fitting on an English saddle, same thing. When you ride, have your saddle pad, have your girth out, put your reins in one hand, and stick your fingers under the D-ring. And you should have no pinching on those fingers, both sides. Okay, so if your saddle fits between the two lines, what you marked on the horse's back, and your channel is nice and wide on the English saddle, and the pencil flies down 4 inches on the first line and slides nicely underneath the D-ring, then you completed step one, the static fit. Dynamic fit, you ride, now your weight goes on, the horse is moving. Horses can move their back up. Sometimes they're very rigid. Sometimes they bring the back very quick up. Sometimes you have saddles who are very firm or rubber or soft in the flocking. So it depends how the flocking interacts with the movement of the horse. That's why you got to do the dynamic fit. Okay? So yeah. Ride in it, stick your fingers in that, and better not pinching. If that pinches, again, back to the bleeding feet. Okay? Horses are master in hiding their pain. They will not tell you it pinches. Because if I'm going to show you, before the equipment makes them lame, they'd be already dealing with long-term damage.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, it was, again, a super long question, Morgan, but it's so hard to explain that on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So does the thicker pad... I know you said it won't influence the pinching saddle, but does it make it worse putting a thicker pad on?
100%, because you're decreasing the channel space for the spinal nerves on each side of the horse's spine. There's 6 spinal nerves which your saddle can hit. Right? You're increasing to hit 12 spinal nerves, and you're decreasing the wither area. Yeah. The reason why I mentioned the pencil trick is because since 35 million years, horses fight for dominance. And when they breed, and the mare is in heat, he bites in the withers. That makes the horse stop and hollow the back. Soon as a horse hollows their back, all the weight goes on the forehand, all the dorsal spinal processes touch. We talked about kissing spine, right? So the number one, get off the horse's nerves. Get off my nerves. Yeah. So that is super important. And the reason why you have to have a first line, if you have a jumping saddle or eventing saddle, the stuffing, what goes on the shoulder, doesn't matter. But if your D-ring goes forward, past where the mane ends, you hit the lung meridian point. That's a reflex point. Everybody who works with acupuncture knows MP13 stands for lung meridian point. Your saddle hits it, your girth, your launching surcingle, your vaulting girth, anything what gets girth down, anything. The breathing goes up and your risk of ulcer and colic goes up too. Okay, so not your breathing, the horse's breathing. So this is stuff, Morgan, which I am fascinating, because as a saddle maker, as a trainer, as a rider, as a saddle fitter, I do not want to do it. I just simply want to know, if you use your fingernails and you scratch the horse on the horse's shoulder, the lip goes and quiver and he wants to groom your back. You've probably seen that before.
Yeah.
So these trigger points make his lip a quick. There's other trigger points with the saddle though, and the horse has no choice because you are not reading it or you don't know about it. That's why it says today saddle fitting is in my opinion, everybody a must-know subject.
Oh, absolutely. I agree for sure. Something that I think can be a little bit overlooked sometimes is girth fit. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of a good fitting girth and if all girths have even pressure?
Yeah. So if I look at your logo, I see feeling fine therapy. So the first letter of the first word is the F, and the last letter of the last word on therapy is the Y. And it happens to be on that circle just below the center.
Mm-hmm.
And since thousands of years, the girth was always just below the center. Why? Because the higher the girth, just below the center, you don't need to have a super tight girth. It stabilizes the saddle from rolling from one to one side. If you would have the girth going all the way underneath the flap, where the L and the R is, the L in feeling and the R on therapy. Okay. Then there's your stirrupleather pushing pressure into the buckle, into the horse's sides. Your leg is on top. So you're pushing in the buckle from the long girth, short billets into the horse. If your girth is very, very short, you're on the bottom of your lower gap, natural healing for all animals. Let's say it only goes to A and only goes to M. A of natural and M of animal. Okay, so if I'm looking at these two letters, that would be on the edge of the horse's pectoralis muscle. One of the most important muscles on the horse's thoracic sling. So the horse has no collarbone. For the horse to lift itself, the serratus and the pectoralis need to lift the horse up in the ribcage to get light on the forehead. So if you put on the pectoralis muscle, the buckle, the girth, you're pinching that nerve. You need to ride 20 minutes to make that nerve numb before that muscle can help the horse to lift the ribcage. Who would have thought the right length girth is more important than the shape or the design? Who would have thought? So by having the right length, less is more. Less is more. I mean, there is some special girth when horses have severe problem or rib issues. There's some therapy girth. So we can talk about this maybe next time. But what is super important, the message I hear is KISS, keep it simple.
Mm. Yeah.
So the girth, if you look at the Western girth, they have a nice wide mohair, pressure distribution on the side, and it goes narrow on the elbow all the way up to the letter F into the leather Y. 14-3 quarter horses will have normally a 28 to 30 inch girth. Please tell me why 17-3 dressage horses go with a 26 inch girth or 28. It's absolutely ridiculous, right? Because they don't know, right? There are some girths you can buy now for $790. And I could say, wow, what is that thing, right? But it's marketing. So thinner the girth, so more wide-bearing surface over the center, and careful with elastic. I always say, stay away from it if you can. If you need or the horse needs elastic, again, less is more. If the elastic is longer than an inch on each side, or on the jumping girth, longer than 3 inches on each side, the horse will rapidly increase his breathing. And you know what that means. Elevated heart rate means stress. Stress means colic and ulcers. Why is that? Because a super elastic girth acts like a python snake around the horse's belly. Let me explain. When the horse exhales, the ribcage goes smaller. The horse inhales, the ribcage goes bigger, just like us. But if the horse exhales and he feels that girth get tight again, because that super elastic size girth very often get too much girthed up, because you feel constantly the saddle is moving. So what do rider do? They really girth it up. And now you got this massive elastic band around the horse's ribcage. Every time the horse exhales, their ribcage elastic comes together. The horse inhales, he needs to stretch the elastic. And they have done that with human runners, right? They put elastic band around the human chest. And if you have elastic band around your chest, you start to breathe flat because you consume energy, because you don't need to constantly expand your chest to stretch that girth. But with the human, we don't have the fear factor. We are predators. The animal feels, I don't breathe enough. I got to defend myself. I need to conserve energy to run away from the lion. I was blown away when I saw that research, again, in Holland, when I thought a super elastic girth is the best for the horse. It's the worst it can do. So if you get a normal girth, nice weight-bearing surface in the sternum, Don't go over 8 inch unless you have a jumper and you have these big belly pads. Okay. And you go nice and narrow on the elbow and as little elastic as you can. That's and the right length. That's my best advice I can give.
Yeah, that's great. That's great information for sure. So as far as I know, saddle fitting techniques are not regulated at all. So how, if people want to find a saddle fitter, is there a good way to do that or questions to ask them to help them figure out who would be best for them?
Absolutely. Morgan, I started our interview by saying how I got into it. And I was sponsored with saddles. And I got so annoyed that everybody says something else. When I started creating Saddle Fit for Life, my dream is to make this a universal language for saddle fitting. Because Saddle Fit for Life is based on human anatomy and horses' anatomy and their physiology, biomechanics. Full stop, nothing else. The anatomy. So please tell me why we have seven different saddle fitting schools out there. Seven. And they all contradict. It's absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. My advice to the question you just put out there, on Saddle Fit for Life, we list a list of certified equine ergonomists. And those are the, I call them the guardians of the horses. These are people who are learned the art of saddle fitting based on science and the law of nature and not opinions on a certain brand. That's why I wanted to have a Saddle Fit for Life Academy, which is totally independent on what brand, if it's Western or English, or racing. So go on our line, Saddle Fit for Life. And if you're in the area of Utah or wherever you live, check out where your closest equine ergonomist or saddle fitter is.
Yeah, that's great. That's kind of a good segue into some of your courses that you offer. I know in the beginning you said that they're good for anybody. So can you give a good summary on what your courses are?
Yes. The one course is what we call the introduction course. I learned in Pony Club, the saddle has to have 3-finger clearance in the front. I wanted to make something very simple, very affordable for anybody who is concerned about tack, okay? But I don't want to make this into a degree, but I wanted to know the basics. Like I was just telling you about the line one and line in the back, first and the second line, the pencil, the starting and the dynamic fit. So we created what we call the introduction course for mm-hmm. saddle fitting. Then we have something for people want to do a little bit more so they can challenge or ask the right questions when their saddle fitter comes. Because most people, they trust and they work great with saddle fitters. But sometimes there's a situation where they say, that doesn't make sense to me. So how can I keep a good relationship with my saddle fitter but ask the right question? So that's the next course. And then we have a course for veterinarians or any body workers who are already working with horses, but they see, oh my God, I adjust the same area again, it's the back. I know it's from the saddle. So they want to have the knowledge to explain to the customer why their saddle works and doesn't work mm-hmm. and how to speak professional with other saddle fitters to help that horse. What good is it if I'm a chiropractor, I keep adjusting the SI joint or the spine or the neck, if the saddle undoes it? I'd leave your place, Morgan, and tomorrow you ride your saddle, and in 3 days you call me back and says, the adjustment didn't hold. Well, guess what? You have the torture device on again. So the body workers know that, and they wanted to have good explanation what is based on science and facts. And then the last course, if people say, oh my God, I love this so much. I went to university, or I've been in this industry for so long with equine awareness, etc. I want to make a living with this. And I want to become a professional equine ergonomist. Equine, well, animal, ergonomist, comes from the Greek word measuring something three-dimensional. The rider's seat, saddle, and the horse's back, and how all this interacts. And then the PhD of all the courses is the saddle ergonomist, where you will learn how to alter certain saddles, certain Western saddles, and can make the adjustment yourself as well. So that's a huge selection for every rider.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I personally haven't taken any of your courses, but it's on my list and something that I definitely would like to do, especially after our conversation today, because I work on lots of horses every week and I don't know enough about saddle fit. And I think it, like you said, it is probably the number one thing that can change a horse's life, because they're getting in their equipment every day. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that was fun.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. This episode was high in demand, so I hope you guys got everything out of it that you were hoping. If you loved it, please leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us get our podcast out there. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you get updated on when our new episodes drop. And we will see you next time. Bye.